Now, on a woodland river, a middle-aged man rows a boat. A heavy-set woman with light brown hair reclines in the stern. A straw hat shades the woman's green eyes. Titles appear. Kirstie Alley as Joanne Beckett, While I Was Gone. Starring Bill Smitovich, Janiyah Stevens, and Peter Horton. Deborah O'Dell, Sandra Caldwell, Rebecca Benson, Jeff Topping, Kim Poirier. The man trades the oars for a fishing pole and casts a line into the river. As he turns the reel, the woman watches. Her gaze lifts toward the overhanging tree branches and bright sky. Her eyes widen and a bright light flashes. A bird's eye view shows the fisherman alone in the boat. The woman blinks, then bolts upright.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
She slowly meets the gray-haired man's concerned gaze.
I drifted off a second.
You want to go in?
No, I'm fine. I'm all right.
I've got two fish. Two trout. One wife. That's all a man can reasonably ask of his maker.
His wife warily glances skyward. Later in the kitchen, she pan-fries the trout. As she serves the fish with wild rice, her husband comes to the table.
Anything for me?
Nothing work-related. A message from Cassie.
Oh, where is she now?
East godforsaken Minnesota, was how she put it.
She loves to tease you.
I don't mind the teasing. A little bit more geographically specific wouldn't hurt.
Oh, you need to know more than the fact that she lives in a van with three guys you've never met, singing songs you can't understand?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you take everything in your stride. Me, I hit every hurdle.
I did my hard time between 13 and 18. Those 5 years when she was Daddy's darling? Not that she wasn't mine, you understand.
She was tough on you.
Tough? She was brutal. The girl did not want to be my daughter. She would have loved it if she'd been found outside your church wrapped in brown paper. Except she still wanted you to be her father.
She lifts a bottle of wine.
To our Cassandra, who couldn't believe her own identity.
Oh, not for me.
Not having wine?
I have to go out tonight.
Daniel, this is our Monday.
I know. It's Amy Halloran.
Is she at home?
Now, they've done all they can.
It's just awful.
I won't be late.
Okay.
Oh, native trout with lemon. Darling, I can die happy.
As Daniel folds his hands in prayer, his wife sips wine. Nighttime. In a bedroom, the woman brushes out her hair, then approaches a vanity mirror. As she wipes her hands over her full face, she hesitates. Joanne runs her fingers across the age-worn lines under her eyes, then presses her jawline taut. Slipping her robe off her broad shoulders, she briefly eyes her full figure, then replaces the robe. More titles. Music by Lauren Schrag. Edited by Neil Mandelberg, ACE. Director of Photography, Derek Underschultz. Co-Executive Producer, Randy Sutter. Teleplay by Alan Sharp. Based on the novel by Sue Miller. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Dutch Priest, Justin Soule, and Chris Flowers. Read by Gailey Heidemann. Now she enters a dimly lit room. A tan retriever lies on the bed.
There you are.
The woman grips its collar.
Get down.
The dog obediently leaps to the floor. Joanne removes a teddy bear from the bed, tosses it onto a window seat, and straightens the zebra-striped comforter. She gazes at wall posters of a young female guitarist. One shows the sullen girl in dark eyeshadow and lipstick.
Look, Lassie. We should have been sisters. And you could hate me without the hard feelings.
Now from outside, light glows through the shades of two upper story windows. More titles, directed by Mike Robe. A pickup truck parks in the driveway. Daniel gets out and heads inside with the retriever. Upstairs, his wife reads a book in bed titled Small Animal Dentistry. Entering a walk-in closet, the man takes off his jacket and hangs it up.
Real bad?
Joanne removes her reading glasses. He rubs his face.
Real bad. Family was glad she was home.
As he undresses, she pulls a pillow over her lap.
You know, Daniel, something funny happened on the river in the boat.
What?
Well, I was lying there, and I wasn't asleep. I was conscious, actually. And I don't know, I was just thinking about where life takes us on its current.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream.
Anyway, I was inside and outside at the same time. I was in and outside of my life.
Life is but a dream?
He hangs up his pants.
It was like a dream. But then all of a sudden I found myself. I think I went out of my body and I was way above the river. And I looked down and I could see the boat and you in it. But I wasn't there.
He enters a bathroom.
I wasn't in the boat.
Daniel reaches for mouthwash.
Don't you think that's weird?
It was hot. You were daydreaming. It happens.
You know, it seemed like it was some kind of a premonition.
He spits out mouthwash.
Premonition? Of what?
I don't know.
Daniel dries his hands.
Well, maybe you were thinking about death. And maybe the boat you were in was your life or marriage or...
No, it was more like we had never met and I had taken a different path.
He turns off the lights.
I'm glad you didn't.
Me too.
He slides into bed.
Why didn't you tell me this at the time?
Because it was scary. Looking down and not seeing myself in the boat.
Well, honey, we're both in the same boat.
Grinning, Daniel kisses her lightly. She cups his face in her hands and presses her lips passionately against his. Daniel's hand gently moves up her arm to her shoulder.
Wow. Where did that come from?
She hungrily kisses him again. He pushes her away.
Honey, I'm sorry I can't match it tonight. I'm just...
It's all right. There'll be other nights.
As Daniel lies his head on the pillow, Joanne sets her book aside, turns off the light, and tidies the sheet and blanket around his chest. She massages his shoulder and neck.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Cassie used to like that, too. Once upon a time.
Daytime. A sign on a brick building reads, Adams Mills Veterinary Clinic. Inside, Joanna inserts a thermometer into a cat's ear.
Oh, it's normal. You get to go home. Call Mrs. Truscott and tell her to pick him up.
An assistant carries the cat off.
Come on, sugar.
An African-American woman glances at the cat, then faces the vet.
Well, I can't believe you got Evelyn Truscott to cut off that cat's marbles.
Yeah, no more unwanted kittens. Don Juan is officially retired.
He hands Joanne a folder.
The preacher's wife performs yet another miracle.
Yeah, hardly. What do you got for me?
We got a new patient. His name is Arthur. His back legs won't work.
Can you have Jordan bring him back?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
She takes a folder of x-rays to a viewing screen and examines them. Jordan, the assistant, enters.
Right in here, sir.
A goateed man carries a short-haired terrier.
On the table's fine.
The white terrier has black markings on one eye and one ear and lies wrapped in a blanket.
The doctor will be ready.
The veterinarian marks the x-rays, takes one down, and picks up the folder. She enters the exam room.
I'm Dr. Beckett. Joanne. And this is Arthur. Hello, Arthur. What seems to be the problem with Arthur?
Well, he seems to be paralyzed. And I was traveling for quite a while, and I finally came home and found him like this.
Joanne eyes the folder's label.
My wife wasn't paying much attention, I'm afraid.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayhew. Is that Eli Mayhew?
Yes.
Alicia's dead.
She arcs her brow and smiles. Eli grins at her.
Oh, my goodness. Of course you are. You've changed.
Yeah. It's been almost 30 years, hasn't it?
She picks up a reflex hammer.
Your name's Joanne?
Well, I just wasn't quite who I seemed to be in those days. So do you live here now?
We just moved here. I work in Boston, but we live here now.
Well, while we get over our astonishment, let's concentrate on Arthur here.
Yeah.
She pokes the dog's haunches.
He's on cortisone. He's had arthritis for a number of years, which is probably why my wife didn't think much of him not moving around. When I came back and saw him, he can't move his back legs. It has no feeling in them at all, as far as I can tell.
When they've lost motor response like this, it's very serious.
Well, I should have brought him in sooner.
You know, I looked at the x-rays, and when there's this much neurological damage, we have to consider surgery. But I need to tell you that is serious and invasive, and we can never guarantee the success of it.
What are the odds?
It's a long shot. Given Arthur's age, the anesthetic could even prove too much.
Eli gazes down at Arthur and rubs the coarse white hair behind his ears.
And if we don't do anything?
If we do nothing, then you have an invalid dog, which is similar to an invalid human. You know, you just have to take care of them, keep them clean, make sure they get a lot of exercise.
How could he exercise if he can't walk?
Oh, well, we have prosthetics now. These little carts that support the hindquarters of the animal.
Eli sadly shakes his head.
Well, that's impossible.
Well, the only other option is to put him down.
Arthur lies with his jaw on the softly cushioned table as Eli pets him.
Put him down.
I know, pick the word. None of them are very pleasant. Yeah, I can tell you this, though. You don't have to make a rush decision. Arthur is in no pain.
Could I be alone with him just for a minute?
Of course you can. I'll just be in the other room.
Thanks.
Joanne heads out.
You could do this now?
She stops in the doorway and looks back.
Yes, if that's what you've decided, but like I said, he's not in pain.
Joanne watches Eli as his hand gently slides along Arthur's back, the dog's eyes shut.
Just push this buzzer when you're ready and I'll come back.
Eli glances at a button on the wall, then sadly lowers his eyes to his dog. As Joanne leaves the room, he pulls up a stool and pets Arthur's bristled coat. From the hallway, Joanne peers through the window at the man with his sick pet. Eli leans on the table, staring at his dog. Joanne watches as Eli's fingers delicately stroke Arthur's neck, then bolster his own head as he starts to sob. As Joanne passes through a waiting room, a woman lifts a Siamese cat off a scratching pole and puts it in a blanketed basket. Other people and their pets wait in chairs as Joanne puts Eli's file on the reception desk countertop and faces the receptionist.
So what happened to the big guy? Did he go out the back door?
No. Still here.
What? He could be back there snapping up stuff for all you know.
I don't think so. Known him for a long time, well before I was Mrs. Beckett.
Oh. So? He's an old flame, then.
No. We just lived in the same house in Boston in the 70s.
So you were hippies together.
I can't imagine anyone calling Eli Mayhew a hippie.
Hippie?
The receptionist carries a folder to a file room shelf.
Hey, baby.
Uh-huh.
You believe in premonitions?
Girl, please, no. I believe that some things happen because they were meant to happen, but premonitions, no. That's just superstition.
Or voodoo.
Don't let me work no roots on you.
Go.
Watch.
Betty points playfully, then answers the phone. In the exam room, Joanne and Jordan approach Eli.
Does it take long?
Joanne arranges a tray of vials and needles.
No, it's quick.
Petting Arthur, Joanne faces Eli.
I should warn you, it's shockingly quick. But it'll be painless.
Eli leans away from Arthur.
Okay.
You sure?
Yeah, sure as I'm ever going to be.
Jordan brings the instrument.
All right, so you just...
What?
Just hold his head.
As Eli cradles Arthur's head, Joanne slips a cord over his paw.
That's perfect.
Joanne slides the cord snug around Arthur's leg.
You know, I was telling him that at any given time...
Joanne removes the syringe's plastic covering.
There are only 7 great dogs in the world, and he's one of them. And I've been really lucky to know him.
Joanne rubs the short fur of Arthur's leg, then places the needle against the skin.
Did you know that about the 7 great dogs?
Joanne's solemn eyes lift from her work.
Yes, I'd heard that.
Joanne holds the needle in place with one thumb as the syringe's stopper forces the bluish fluid from 4 milliliters slowly down to 1 milliliter. Arthur leans to one side, his head sagging into Eli's hand. As the syringe empties, Arthur's body goes limp.
God. It was quick.
As Joanne removes the needle, Eli scratches his wavy, graying hair.
Yeah, it is.
The vet slides the cord off the lifeless dog's leg.
Thank you.
Okay.
Joanne shifts her gaze from the dog to Eli. His head sways from side to side as he stifles tears.
Would you like me to make arrangements?
No, that's okay. Is there...
Eli looks around the room.
Is there a back way out?
Yes, just turn left there.
They gently lift the carcass, and Eli carries it toward the door.
Thanks, Alicia. Joe.
We'll talk later.
Of course.
Joanne slowly watches as Eli walks away carrying the dog. At home, the retriever rushes downstairs as Joanne comes in.
Hey. Hey. Did you know that, Boomer?
Huh?
About the 7 great dogs?
Joanne opens the basement door.
Stay, Boomer. Here.
Joanne goes downstairs, turns on a light, and removes a clear plastic storage crate from a shelf. She puts it on a table, removes its lid, takes out a few articles, and rummages through a stack of envelopes. Joanne takes out a black and white photo. In it, a wavy-haired young man and a young blonde woman sit on the porch steps of a clapboard house. Behind them, a dark-haired woman with outstretched arms, a guy in jeans and a t-shirt, and a long-haired man with sunglasses stand. Joanne focuses on the grinning face of the wavy-haired man, then on the round-faced blonde woman. One by one, the figures turn to color. A breeze stirs the blonde girl's hair. Her smile fades. The dark-haired girl lowers her arms and grins down at her.
Come on, Alicia.
Alicia faces the girl with a faint smile. Holding the photo, Joanne smiles and shakes her head. The dark-haired girl hops down the steps, takes Alicia's hands, pulls her up and kisses her lips. Staring at the photo, Joanne smiles. In the photo, the young women dance.
Sunshine, go away today.
As the woman twirls Alicia under her arm, the guy in the t-shirt balances on the porch railing. Remembering, Joanne smiles wistfully. The wavy-haired guy sips a beer, gloomily watching as all 4 of his friends join hands and dance in a circle.
When he tells me I better
come on,
get
Eli.
Setting down the beer, young Eli joins in. The auburn-haired woman dances in the center of the circle. The long-haired man grins.
I got brand new titties.
As they all rush inside, the color fades, and they appear again in Joanne's photo. In the kitchen, she points out young Eli to Daniel.
And for the first few seconds, he was a total stranger, and then it hit me, and I was dizzy. The past just became so alive.
But you were pleasantly surprised, right?
When I got over the shock, yes.
Well, I have to meet this man. It'd be interesting to talk to someone who knew you when you were a young, idealistic radical.
As opposed to a middle-aged, chubby veterinarian?
Daniel wears a cleric's collar.
I don't think of you as a veterinarian.
You are such an ass.
This Eli Mayhew, what does he do now?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. He was a chemistry student. He used to spend all day in the lab and come home very late at night. Kept a very tidy room.
Yeah.
He was the guy you went to for a loan.
She points to the long-haired teen.
And then this is Duncan. Duncan was a musician.
Ah.
He was actually a bit of a jerk. But he played the guitar like Eric Clapton.
Mm-hmm.
And then Larry. Larry was the radical. He used to call himself an anarchist insurgent, whatever that means.
Joanne's gaze shifts to the dark-haired woman.
And then there was Dana.
Joanne peers solemnly at Dana's grinning face.
Dana was Dana. Mother Courage meets Madonna. We all love Dana.
Daniel furrows his brow. He checks his pager.
I have to go out again. It's coming fast.
What?
She's in God's hands now.
Oh. Amy.
I'll leave you with your happy memories.
They weren't all happy.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot.
No. They were happy.
She kisses Daniel, then meets his gaze.
Right up until they weren't.
Daniel smiles and rubs Joanne's shoulders.
Bye.
Bye.
He turns and leaves. Joanne sits back down and peers sadly at the photo. Joanne lifts the photo close to her eyes. In a flashback, the porch glows red. Alicia runs screaming out the door, wearing a short-skirted waitress uniform with a frilly bodice and lacy apron. In her kitchen, a tear rolls down Joanna's cheek and her lips tremble. Now, on a grassy plot dotted with shade trees, tombstones and gravesites surround a small stone church.
We are gathered here this glorious Sunday morning in God's house to give thanks for our blessings and to receive comfort for our sorrows. And we do have some sorrows this morning. Most of you know our friend and neighbor, Amy Halloran, who has been an active member of our parish her whole life, has come home to be with her family, to be sustained and nourished by those she loves most for as long as the good Lord grants. And I know that we pray for Amy and her family during this difficult time.
As Eli and a woman enter, Daniel looks up from the podium.
The question of suffering, human suffering, is the single most asked and unanswered question in all religious debate.
Joanne turns around in her pew.
Does God allow this interminable pain that afflicts the sick and the wounded among us?
In a flashback, a blue and white sedan parks in front of the clapboard house. Clad in a bikini, Dana suns on the porch roof reading a paperback. Wearing overalls, Alicia exits the car with a gallon of paint and a roller.
Got it! Cool!
Dana gets to her feet.
I can help.
Now inside, Dana and Alicia paint the walls pink.
You slept with them all?
Yep. It was nothing heavy. I mean, we're all still friends.
On a ladder, Dana turns and faces Alicia.
Do you think that makes me a slut?
No. I mean, if it's all cool, then that's great.
Yeah. You know, I kind of just look at it like dancing. You have different partners for different dances. Some like to waltz, and some like to do the tango, and some like to foxtrot.
Let me guess. Duncan tangos.
Yeah, but the dance of narcissism.
And Larry, he does rock and roll?
Yeah, that's just like, cut to the chase, let's get it on.
Rolling paint, Alicia's smile slowly fades.
Well, that leaves...
Waltzing Mayhew. You know, Eli, he was really sweet, though. He's never had oral sex before, so he just thought I was doing them the greatest favor in the world.
Alicia's paint roller comes to a stop.
You like him, don't you?
Turning, Alicia meets Dana's gaze.
I think he's got a thing for you.
No, he was over that months ago.
As Dana and Alicia go back to painting, Eli enters with a coffee can.
Oh, hey, Eli.
Hey.
Dana smiles coyly.
I'm going to the store for tonight's dinner, but, bank's empty.
Alicia, can you put in five for me? I'll owe you.
On the stepladder, Dana swivels her hips and continues painting. As Eli looks away nonchalantly, Alicia digs in her purse, then drops a few bills in the coffee can.
Oh, thanks.
Eli turns away.
What do you think?
Eli gazes at the pink walls.
Pretty pink. I don't know, it's like being in somebody's mouth or something.
Eli's quizzical gaze shifts between the women.
What?
Nothing.
Eli eyes them sheepishly, then tilts the can. As he leaves, Alicia shuts the door. Back in church, Joanne smiles.
Mystery? That God is the answer for which there is no question. And while that paradox may embody the very heart of Christian faith, it is a bleak response to souls suffering and souls grieving.
As Joanne cranes a look at Eli, a flash shows young Eli sobbing.
It would be presumptuous of me and futile to explain such a vast puzzle.
Alicia, Duncan, and Larry sit on the porch steps as paramedics pass with a stretcher.
Looks like a random killing here.
Indeed, our capacity to love while suffering is perhaps more important than at any other time in our lives.
Later, outside, Daniel shakes congregants' hands.
Yes,
thank you.
Joanne kisses his cheek.
See you at home.
Bye.
Good sermon.
Thank you, darling.
Joanne watches Eli walk away with a slender young woman on his arm.
Eli?
She catches up with him.
Hi.
Hey. Sylvia, this is Joanne.
Beckett. Oh, hi. Eli told me about running across you. Small world, huh?
Well, to me, it feels pretty large right now. We haven't seen each other in, what, over 25 years?
Well, small Adams Mills. So, how long have you lived here?
Oh, a long time. My husband has been the minister here for 15 years.
Your husband is Reverend Beckett?
That's right.
Wow. We're here because we heard he was the star of the township. He's very handsome up there in the pulpit. And very impressive.
Well, I think Daniel's found his calling. How about you, Eli? Are you still a chemist? You're always so good at that.
Eli's in medical research.
Yes, well, I guess I found my calling, too. To end human suffering through pharmaceuticals. Not quite as comprehensive as your husband's solution.
Well, I'm sure there are different kinds of suffering.
Sylvia glances at Joanne.
So did Eli tell you I neglected Arthur?
No, not at all.
Well, I did. I didn't notice he hadn't moved.
You know, I don't think noticing it sooner would have made much difference.
You know what? You guys should come to our house for dinner.
Well, you should come have dinner with us. Eli's a fabulous cook.
Still?
Eli returns Joanne's smile.
Still. So you and the Reverend must come. I'd love to meet him up close and personal.
All right, then we'll do that.
Great. It's a date. I'll call you. You'll have to tell me all about him when he was young.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye.
Later, pulling into her driveway, Joanne spots a white van parked by the house. On its side, black letters perched on the neck of an electric guitar spell Cass. Two painted black sheep face each other on the rear doors. As Joanne carries groceries inside, she gapes toward the kitchen table.
Cassie?
Two young men eat ravenously as a third turns from the fridge.
Hi.
Mrs. Beckett. I'm your daughter's guitar player.
She shakes his hand.
Oh, so nice to meet you.
Hi. This is, Jesus Martinez on drumsticks.
How do you do?
How's it going?
And Byron on bass.
Hi, how are you? No need to stand.
Cass is upstairs. She got first dibs on the bathroom.
All right, well, listen, you guys help yourself to whatever you want, and her dad's going to be home in a few minutes, and if you don't mind, I want to go say hi to Cassie, so please excuse me.
No problem.
Joanne heads upstairs.
Hey, thanks again.
Sure.
The guitar player faces Byron and Jesus. They converge on the bag of groceries.
Cassie?
Upstairs, Joanne follows the hallway to a closed door.
Cassie?
Yeah, sir.
Her daughter opens the door, wrapped in a bath towel. Joanne hugs her.
I'm so glad to see you. Oh, my God, what a surprise.
Hope you don't mind me turning the boys loose on your food.
Oh, no, not at all.
They enter Cassie's room.
Oh, honey, your dad is going to be so excited to see you.
You still playing full houses?
Yeah, packs them in.
You know, Mom, I was thinking, maybe that's where I get my love of the spotlight.
I never thought about that, but I think you're right. Say, Cassie, you gonna stay over?
You know, we gotta keep heading west.
Cassie emerges from her closet in a black T-shirt and pulls on jeans.
Cassie, couldn't you just spend one night?
We got firm dates, Mom. And by the way, if you could not call me Cassie, I mean, if you can remember.
Oh. Okay. It's good to see you, Cass.
Joanne heads downstairs.
And the black sheep.
Later, Joanne brings snack bowls to the band. Cassie sits on a sofa with Daniel and Boomer.
So there's no one, I kid you not, not a single person in the place we went on for a second show. And Cass goes to the owner and says,
There's nobody out there.
And of course he says you're paid for two shows, you do two shows.
Right, so we give it all we got. Yeah. I mean, we really laid it down. The whole set. And when we finished, we all took a bow.
And then we did an encore.
Joanne smiles from across the room.
Hey, Cass, do you still sing that Britney song? What was it called? Baby, baby, give me another chance.
What is it? Please.
Oh, come on, honey, you sing that so pretty.
Cassie shakes her head.
Cass can sing the Lord's Prayer in Braille. Your daughter's got a great set of pipes up in Beckett. Like Annie Lennox meets Janis Joplin. The best fusion of a laser and a blowtorch you will ever hear.
Oh, that is so outrageously over the top, McDowell, and you know it.
Yeah, you should come hear her.
No, they should not, guys, okay? I mean, at least not until I'm famous.
Well, you're famous with me already, honey.
Thanks, Daddy.
Daniel kisses her on the head.
Hey, I'm allowed.
McDowell and the others make faces.
Who likes the love?
Daddy does, too.
Later in the master bedroom.
You don't really think she's sleeping with,
With the black sheep? No, I don't. But I think they're all in love with her.
Hey, who can blame them?
Daniel sets an alarm clock.
I just see her searching, looking for a path. I see myself in her so clearly, it makes me want to wave and go, hey, remember me when I was your age?
You mean when you ran off to your commune?
It was a cooperative.
Oh.
Oh, by the way, I saw Eli Mayhew in church today.
Yeah, I thought I saw two new faces. His wife's pretty glamorous.
She's a looker.
Was that his type back then in the cooperative?
He didn't have so much a type as an archetype.
In a flashback, young Eli sways rhythmically with closed eyes, dancing sensuously. Alicia comes downstairs, stopping to watch him on a landing beneath a round glass window. Eli opens his eyes, spots her, and stops self-consciously.
Keep going. Go on.
Shh. Eli waves her into the room, divided by a curtain of strung beads. Her eyes fixed on the young man's gaze, Alicia slowly descends the last step to the floor and strides up to Eli.
Hi.
Eli sheepishly bobs his head, then peers through the beaded curtain.
I don't like to disturb her.
Alicia follows his gaze. In the adjoining room, Dana gyrates entranced. Swaying soulfully, her hand glides over her neck and chest. Alicia's smile fades.
I don't think you disturb her.
They watch Dana dance. Eyes closed, Dana pivots into a slow twirl, lifts her curly mane, exposing her slender neck, then flings her hair back. Alicia smiles tightly as she shifts her gaze to Eli's forlorn face. He hesitantly touches her shoulder. Eli walks away with downcast eyes. As Dana twirls, Alicia regards Dana's sultry expression, then turns to watch Eli climbing the stairs.
I should invite the Mayhews over for dinner.
Lying beside Daniel, Joanne stares off.
I think they're planning on inviting us.
Well, that's good. Save you from cooking.
Daniel.
Hmm?
Make love to me.
Daniel turns his head on the pillow to face his wife. With a tender grin, he lifts his arm and places it around Joanne. He rolls closer and kisses her. Joanne slowly joins his embrace.
Well, the problem with a lot of the developments in modern neurological medicine...
Now in a sleek modern home, Eli washes vegetables.
...for one of the diseases. It's that we haven't devised an efficient delivery system to get the medicines past the blood-brain barrier.
And this is the field you specialize in.
Yep, that's me, delivery man.
Daniel sips wine as Eli stirs a wok. Sylvia ushers Joanne past an array of sculptures.
I think that death is such a high in disguise.
Oh, dear.
I picked up this piece in the artisan's village in Manzanillo, Mexico.
A framed photo shows Arthur leaping to catch a frisbee.
Is this Arthur?
Oh, yeah. When he was younger, I guess. I certainly never saw him jump like that.
Really? Well, how long have you and Eli been married?
About a year. A little longer, I guess. Yeah. When I first came along, the dog was on his last legs. But Eli refused to accept it. He used to talk to him at night. I mean, really talk to him. To tell you the truth, I thought he was a little weird.
Well, I've never thought of Eli as weird.
Yeah, well, when I first met him, he was. Living on his own, talking to his dog, working all those long hours. You know, at first I thought he was gay.
Joanne arcs her brow at Sylvia.
But he wasn't.
That works out better for you.
Yeah.
Forget it!
Shall we?
After dinner, rows of stubbly candles frame the table's centerpiece.
Stuffed. I've never had better shrimp.
Well, it helps that they were recently alive.
Mm. That's right. That's the secret. Fresh out of the water.
Thank
right.
you.
You're a fine cook.
Thank you.
He always was. You were. And we used to take turns cooking every night, and the only night anyone would show up was the night Eli cooked.
Only because I couldn't convince them that cooking was a matter of literacy. If you can read a cookbook, you can cook.
Very erudite of you.
Yeah,
but then you
really?
Were dealing with Larry, whose specialty was tuna casserole.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Nasty.
That was nasty.
And mine was meatloaf. I hate meatloaf. And then Duncan was good at...
Duncan. Duncan, Mr. Pizza Man.
Yeah, he was a master at
it. Well done, it is.
And then Dana.
Dana was into leftovers.
She was a reheater.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing that the two of you should meet up again. Yeah. Have you ever run into any of the others?
No. To tell you the truth, Alicia's the only one I would have wanted to run into again.
I used to call myself Alicia then. You know. Don't ask.
So.
Alicia.
So what, were you two an item?
No.
Oh, God, no. Oh, I'm sorry,
that's
Henry.
Silly. Thanks a lot.
No, I didn't mean God, no. I just meant no.
Right, okay, I remember now. It was the other one, Donna?
Dana.
Dana. The femme fatale.
Eli slowly lowers his coffee. Daniel's grin fades as he shifts his gaze to Joanne. She musters a brief smile. Sylvia puts down her cup.
Well, changing the subject. Your research, Eli. It's primarily concerned with getting the body to accept the cures that you've developed.
Yeah, that's right. The blood-brain barrier. It's the new frontier.
Eli's going where no man has gone before.
Mm. You know, I sometimes wonder if in our pursuit of longer lives that we're not projecting the idea of transcending mortality itself.
Eli smirks.
Are you afraid that's going to cut into your market?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way.
I've always wanted to know this. Why is it that every major religion forbids suicide? And what, are they afraid that if it's okay to off yourself, that a lot of people living disease-ridden, miserable lives will opt for heaven direct and miss out on the painful part?
Daniel gazes thoughtfully.
Oh, I can't believe that if the injunction against suicide was removed, that a great many of us would take the plunge. The survival instinct is pretty core.
So sure.
Sylvia shifts uncomfortably.
Especially if you could get someone like Joe here to deliver the sympathetic needle.
Eli.
What?
It's
true.
No. Joe has a similar opinion. But the bottom line is our lives are not ours to end. God gave us life. And we have a responsibility to him to honor that gift.
Eli smiles politely.
But what if in the end it is just suddenly dark?
Daniel grins, his gaze darting toward the Mayhews.
Oh, thee of little faith.
Oh, you have... No doubts on that score?
I have some uncertainties, but no doubts.
And the difference between uncertainty and doubt?
Uncertainties have to do with comprehension. Doubt has to do with faith. I'm just as confused as the next guy as to what the kingdom of heaven consists of, but I have no doubt that it will be revealed to me.
Eli lowers his gaze. Sylvia smiles at Daniel.
That's what I want to hear from my minister.
There you go, Daniel. Another worshiper.
Well, my cup runneth over.
The minister grins, nodding to Sylvia. Nighttime. Joanne's SUV pulls into the Beckett driveway, and Daniel parks at the back door. The minister and his wife get out. Wrapped in a black shawl, Joanne walks around the vehicle, and they start up the steps.
You didn't tell me you used another name back then?
Alicia's dead. Changed my life, changed my name. I told you when I left my first husband that I dropped out of sight.
Ah, yes, the first husband. I always forget I'm number two.
always number one in my heart. How's that?
She leads the way inside. Daytime. In the clinic waiting room, Betty straightens the chairs and magazines. Joanne enters from the exam room.
All right. The retriever is good for another 50,000 miles.
Well, I'll alert all the ducks in the area.
You should be home. Come on, leave.
You sure?
Yes, I can take it from here.
You know, you have a home, too.
I know it. Daniel's with the Hallorans.
Oh, that poor woman wasting away like that. It's draining.
Yeah, hard on everyone.
Betty puts on her coat.
Those were fine words the Reverend spoke on Sunday. Went right to my heart.
Daniel's a great speaker.
He is much more than that. He's a man of God. More than any man that I've ever known. And believe me, I have known plenty.
I believe you.
Betty steps toward the phone.
I'll get that. Go. Don't even think about getting it.
Joanne answers the phone.
Vet clinic.
Betty leaves.
Joe. It's me.
Eli. Oh, I was just leaving.
Okay, do you have a couple of minutes?
Eli sits in a luxury sedan.
Yeah, sure, what is it?
Well, if you were just leaving, I'm outside in your lot.
As Joanne looks out the window, Betty drives past the sedan.
Far end, by the tree.
Okay, well, it's gonna take me a few minutes. Can you wait?
Yeah, sure, I can wait.
Okay, good.
As Joanne hangs up, her gaze lingers briefly on the phone. Then she heads into the exam room. Outside, Eli waits, still holding his cell phone. As Joanne passes a mirror, she quickly smooths a swath of hair. Outside, Joanne walks up to Eli's car, opens the passenger side door, and gets in beside him.
Hey.
Hey.
Nice car.
Be for the price. Look, I just wanted to say I hope I wasn't offensive last night.
Offensive? No.
No, you're confrontational. I know Sylvia thought maybe I went too far.
No. Daniel likes to spar with the best of them. Right?
Averting his gaze, Eli nods and smiles.
I got the impression he was a little surprised by you being called Alicia.
Oh, yeah, I sort of, forgot to mention that.
Joanne rubs the bridge of her nose.
Why did you change your name?
Because I married my high school sweetheart when I was 19. I don't know, one day I had this sort of... I don't know what you call it. Anyway, I saw my life sort of as if it were a road straight out in front going on and on and on, and I could see what he would become and what I would be and what our children will... 2.5 of them would be, and I don't know. I just got scared and I ran.
You had a premonition.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have thought that you were the kind of guy who believed in premonitions. I mean, scientist that you are.
I'm a scientist by day. But at night...
Joanne watches Eli twist his wedding band around his finger.
By night.
Joanne leans forward, gazing intently. He touches her shoulder.
Could we meet sometime? I mean, some other time when we could talk.
Joanne's eyes shift.
Yeah, sure.
I gotta be in Boston all this week.
I can do Boston.
Okay.
But I mean, it's 30 miles from here.
Okay, I'm staying at the Ambassador.
Whoa. It's very upscale.
Yeah. Oh, big time pharmaceutical guy now. Okay, Friday, lunch?
Friday is good. Lunch is good.
Eli meets her gaze.
Great.
Okay. Then I'll see you Friday.
Okay.
Joanne opens the door, then looks back.
Bye-bye.
Joanne gets out and turns back toward the clinic. Eli sits motionless, then exhales a deep breath. Now at the Beckett house, Daniel shaves.
It's like there's nothing left of her. Just a membrane holding the essence of Amy Halloran.
Joanne's blurry form moves behind a shower curtain.
It's awful for the family, but it's beautiful. in a strange way.
Water cascades over her face.
We're reminded once again that the body is just a housing, a shell. Lovely woman, though. Beautiful family. It's a shame, really.
In a flashback, Alicia opens her bedroom door. Dana exits the bathroom, wrapped in a towel, then heads down a hallway. Wearing a soft robe, Alicia grabs shampoo and a soap dish from a dresser, then quickly crosses to the bathroom. In the steamy room, Eli leans his head back against the wall with eyes closed, holding a towel across his waist.
I'm sorry.
Eli opens his eyes. He shakes his head with a flustered smile.
Don't worry about it.
Alicia lets her gaze linger on Eli as he wipes his face. He notices her and stops. Eli grins and Alicia turns away. Back in the present, Joanne smiles and lets the water drench her face. Now on a residential street, groomed hedges surround large homes. As Joanne drives, she eyes the houses, then glances at a garbage collector filling a dump truck. Joanne parks at her old co-op. Scaffolding rises to the porch roof, and a sign on the lawn reads, "Another renovation by Federated Construction." In a flashback, the former resident strike poses on the steps.
Hurry up!
Cheese!
The vigorous bunch freezes. In her waitress uniform, Alicia runs down the steps in terror. Joanne sits at the wheel, staring sadly toward the open front door's idle swaying. Joanne walks toward the porch. She climbs the steps, stopping on the porch's chipped paint floor as the wind rustles her hair. Gazing through the open door, sunlight and shadows fall on strips of clear plastic tarp. Joanne steps to the threshold and pushes open the door. Alicia steps inside.
Anybody home?
In a flashback, she removes her coat, revealing her uniform.
Hello?
She hangs her coat under the round window. Alicia enters the kitchen and opens the refrigerator. Its light glows on her face. Alicia rummages along a shelf, then halts. She slowly lowers her gaze to the linoleum floor. Our view follows down the shadow of her leg to a blotchy smear of partially clotted blood on the floor. Alicia notices a trail of blood smears across the speckled linoleum, which continues around a corner. Alicia follows the trail, then looks up and peers through the hanging beads screening the adjoining room. Dana lies sprawled on the floor, pale and lifeless. The blood smears continue around her negligee and a short, silky robe. The beadwork's glitter blurs a darting view of the coffee can bank, the blood-soaked robe, and to Dana's half-closed eyes. Alicia rushes to the body, lifting Dana's bloody arm.
Dana!
Alicia struggles to lift her friend's head.
Dana.
Alicia drops Dana's arm, her own blood-soaked hand shaking. She runs out the front door, past Joanne. Joanne stares down at Dana's body. She backs away from the vision through the plastic strips hanging across the room and towards sunlight streaming through the opening door. She bumps into Eli and hugs him.
Eli, what's happening?
It's okay.
What's happening?
Are you okay?
No.
Are you okay?
Joanne kisses him passionately, and he returns her kiss, holding her close. Clinging to his neck and shoulders, she glances at the floor, tears streaming.
Are you here? How did you know I would be here?
I didn't know. I mean, it's a coincidence. I just came back to see the house. I've never been back.
Joanne presses her face against his shoulder. Eli stares intently over her shoulder.
Yeah.
Joanne holds Eli close. With his arm around her, he leads her away.
Okay.
Now, a stately hotel flies several flags of different nationalities over its awning. In a suite, a bed overlooks a sunken sitting room through a wood post railing. Eli pours two drinks, then hands one to Joanne. They toast each other, then drink. As Eli sits on a couch, Joanne raises her glass high.
That's good.
Eli looks down distractedly. Joanne shifts her eyes.
Daniel believes in free will. He says it's God's gift to us.
Some gift.
You know, something happened just the day before you came into my office. I had this sort of it was a premonition. And I was in a boat.
Eli gets up and paces.
What's wrong?
He touches his stubbly goatee.
I think this was supposed to happen.
Joanne smiles.
Yeah. And even if it wasn't, it did.
She presses her glossy red lips together. Eli approaches, shaking his fist uneasily. He sits beside Joanne, holding her wrist.
Listen, Alicia.
I like Alicia. That's who I was, around you and Dana.
Yeah, I haven't been able to talk to anybody about Dana or those times.
Dana once said that I should tell you.
Tell me what?
I was attracted to you.
Yeah, she told me the same thing.
Now, of course I didn't, because I didn't know if you, you know, felt that way about me. But you were always so wonderful to talk to that...
I was so crazy about her. About Dana.
Crazy about her?
I couldn't understand why she would say something like that to me when she knew how I felt. I mean, I knew she'd had relationships with Duncan and Larry at some point, even... Maybe she had something going on with you.
Nothing like that. I mean, I loved her, but...
It didn't matter. I couldn't see past how I felt.
Joanne's mouth hangs agape.
Have you ever had that? Where somebody else just becomes your whole world? Everything?
I think it's the one thing I missed. Or avoided.
You don't even see the world through your own eyes. Through theirs.
As he looks off, Joanne closes her eyes and shifts her jaw.
I had no idea that you were that obsessed with Dana.
She gets up and walks past him. He shifts in his seat.
Well, Dana warned me, said I couldn't go around brooding. Alicia, she was my first. For everything, for sex, for love. She gave me that, you know, she gave both of those together. She was incredible. I mean, I know I didn't have much to compare it to then, but losing that was like being kicked out of Eden.
I didn't know scientists believed in Eden.
Oh. I believed in a lot of things before I killed Dana.
Joanne furrows her brow. Eli sits with his eyes closed.
What is that, a bad joke? It wasn't funny, Eli.
He looks at her.
Why would you say something like that? Some druggie came in off the street. That's what the police said. And you were at the lab all day.
No, I was at the lab, but I came back.
Joanne eyes him from a rococo sofa as he crosses to another chair.
When she stopped sleeping with me, I begged her not to. I begged her not to end it. And she said...
Give it time. It'll pass.
No, I don't need time. Oh, she bet me on it. Made an actual bet.
Do you want a bet? 6 months. I'm telling you, 6 months is all you need. Get over it. Go out. Meet some people. Live a little bit.
I don't need 6 months. She said, come back in 6 months. You'll be over it. And I said, that's impossible. She said, oh, well, you come back on that date if you remember. And it was the date. That was that night. That night. The 9th of September. It was a Tuesday.
He gets up, turning away from her.
God!
Joanne inches back toward a window.
Okay, fine. I had been at the lab all day. And I came back so we could be alone. I thought when she saw, you know, that 6 months hadn't made any difference.
Joanne looks around uncomfortably.
Dana had forgotten all about it.
He leans his hand against a door frame.
I had to wake her up.
What's this all about, Eli?
This is the day.
What day?
The day we talked about. You promised, and nothing has changed for me.
Well, things have kind of changed for me. Are you hungry?
I've waited 6 months for you.
Dana munches on some snacks.
She just put her hand on my face.
She caresses the young Eli's cheek.
Poor sweet Eli.
I'm sympathetic.
You are so sweet and faithful.
The way she had with things, dogs, cats, people, you know.
Do you want to go upstairs and we can be sweet to one another?
Poor Eli. Deserve a medal for fidelity.
The young man touches a knife on a counter.
Want to come upstairs? We'll be sweet with one another. That's like you said about being outside yourself.
He raises the weapon. In the present, Joanne tears up.
I could see me.
As the grainy flashback continues, Dana sees Eli brandishing the knife. He stabs her repeatedly. Blood streaks her face.
Again and again, and I had a knife in my hand. I don't even know where I got it. I guess off the counter. And I was.
He continues striking with a knife, its blade soaked red. Quick flashes show Dana's lifeless, bloody corpse. Back in the present, a tear trickles down Joanne's cheek. Eli opens his hand, then faces her.
Why are you telling me this crazy story?
Because you're the only person I can tell. Listen, I've thought about this terrible, terrible thing I did every day of my life, every single day.
Then why didn't you tell the police? Why did you?
Because I didn't mean to kill her. I told you that. I thought you'd understand.
She brushes past him.
No, come on, wait a second.
Just stop it. Why would you think I would understand? You had no right to tell me something like this. You hear me? No right. Not something like this.
She storms out. As Eli watches her, he shifts on his feet and wets his lips. Now our view looks down through an elaborate metal balcony railing as Joanne races across the lobby. A doorman opens the door for her. Outside, the hood of her black SUV shows her upside-down reflection as she hurries down the front steps. Marching past a valet, she gets behind the wheel.
Thank you, ma'am.
He closes the door for her. As she speeds away, our view tilts up toward a third-story window. Quick images move closer to Eli's face as he watches her go. He shifts his eyes pensively, then turns away. Nighttime. As Daniel works in his garage, headlights shine on him. Joanne's SUV pulls up in the dirt driveway, then goes dark. As she climbs out, her husband approaches.
Hey, you got your hair cut.
She hugs him.
What? What, honey? What?
Oh, God, Daniel.
What?
She walks off and he follows. Now in their kitchen, a French door's paned windows look out on the couple as they approach. Daniel opens the door for his wife, who steps inside. As she stops, he steps in front of her, wearing a concerned look.
Joe, tell me. Please, tell me.
Oh, God, Daniel. I made a terrible mistake. I went to see Eli Mayhew in Boston, and he told me that...
She wrings her hands near her mouth.
What did he tell you?
Joanne purses her trembling lips.
That he killed Dana.
Your friend, Dana. Why did you go see him in Boston?
Just to have lunch. You know, talk about old times.
She avoids her husband's gaze.
But I thought you said you were going in the shop.
Nothing happened.
I didn't say it did.
But you should know I didn't do anything wrong.
Except going to Boston to see Eli Mayhew. For what reason, Joe? For the reason of being unfaithful in your marriage?
Am I wrong, Joe?
But nothing happened. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Sorry, I kissed him. Just once, I just got caught up in the moment. I'm so sorry, but that's all that happened, I promise you.
Because he confessed to a murder before you could commit adultery?
Oh, God, Dan, you make that seem like that was beside the point.
Well, my wife just tried to sleep with another man. Forgive me if I have trouble staying on point.
God, Daniel, you know what? Sometimes you can be such a self-righteous ass.
I may be, Joe. I get that way when my wife decides something on the side is worth throwing away our marriage.
He runs upstairs. Joanne follows.
Don't walk away from me. Think of me as one of your damn flock, Reverend Beckett. Tell me what I should do.
Under the circumstances, I don't think I can. Consult your own conscience. I'd say I could use the exercise.
He heads to the door.
Daniel, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
She covers her mouth. As she lowers her hand, her chin quivers. In the Beckett house, Joanne heads downstairs in her nightgown. She pauses and looks into Daniel's study. Wearing his cleric's collar and a pair of reading glasses, he sits with his back to her as she steps to the doorway.
I need your help.
No, I think this is something you need to help yourself with. This was your doing, not mine.
What, about a crime he committed? A crime that he confessed to committing?
Why would he do that?
Because he loved her and she rejected him.
No, no, why would he admit it to you? After all these years.
I don't know. Maybe he thought that I would understand. Maybe he thought I was the only person who could understand. Maybe he'd been tormented all those years and he just wanted to get it out. I don't know.
Tell me, was this intended affair mutual?
What does that mean?
Eli Mayhew invited you to Boston to some motel, I assume.
The ambassador?
Oh, upmarket adultery.
Joanne sits in an armchair in the corner.
Did he invite you there with the intention of having sex?
Her jaw shifts pensively. Daniel faces her.
Or was it you who had that intention?
I've told you.
Oh, I know. I know. Nothing happened.
He crosses the room.
And what if Mr. Mayhew's confession was a way of extricating himself from a very embarrassing situation?
She stares at him, shaking her head.
That's crazy.
Not any crazier than a man telling someone he hardly knows he's committed murder. What did he think you would do once he told?
I don't know, Daniel. I don't know what he thinks or what he thought. I know that what I did was wrong, and I can't change it. I did want to sleep with him, and I let myself believe he wanted to sleep with me, and he wanted to confess, and I guess he convinced himself that I wanted to hear it.
Later.
Too bad. You were both delusional.
Daniel?
He turns and glares at his wife.
It's harder being a Christian than you thought, huh?
He heads outside, slamming the door behind him. Joanne holds her hair back from her face. On the refrigerator, a flyer reads, June 19th, Cass and the Black Sheep, Cranston, New York. Now at a bar.
Oh, baby, and you were gone.
Cass performs.
I reached for you, but baby, you were gone. You cut that door.
Joanne heads through the crowd.
I only break when my time comes.
As Cass smiles at the audience, she spots her mother, who applauds.
Thank you. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Malky, Byron, and Jesus, the Black Sheep.
Her band members bow as they remove their instruments. Cass leaves the stage, sweeping back her jet black hair. Joanne shakes her head proudly.
Hey, lady. What are you doing in a place like this?
You are really, really good.
Thanks. Could have told you that. Could have saved you the drive.
I need to talk to you. Do you have just a few minutes?
Yeah.
She motions to the back. As Joanne follows her, Malky McDowell steps off stage, swigging a beer.
Hey, Cass. 10 minutes tops. Gotta keep the vibe going. She's great, huh?
Oh, yeah, she's great.
He blows his dark, sweaty bangs back from his forehead. In a grungy, poster-laden green room, Cass opens a beer.
Well, what's going on? I know something's wrong.
Sitting on a couch, Joanne drinks her own beer.
Yeah, something's wrong.
You and Dad breaking up?
Her mother looks down.
We're just having some problems. I'm having problems.
Cass pulls up a chair.
So?
She sits, propping up one leg. Joanne avoids her gaze as she sips her beer.
Come on, out with it. I mean, what could be so bad that you're on the outs with Reverend Beckett?
Cass swigs her own beer.
I almost had an affair and your father found out.
You almost had an affair? What kind of crisis is that?
Oh, God, Cassie, you try so hard not to give a damn.
Yeah, well, I'm just not used to being your confidant.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be here if you weren't the only one.
Sneering, Cass raises her eyebrows.
I'm sorry. But just, let's not go there.
Why don't you just tell me what happened?
This man came into my clinic a couple of weeks back. He had been my roommate in the co-op in Cambridge, like a million years ago. Anyway, one of the other roommates, her name was Dana, got murdered in that house.
Right, I remember you telling me about that once.
And this guy, his name was Eli Mayhew. He was her lover.
What'd he do, kill her?
As she drinks her beer, Joanne eyes her squarely. Cass's jaw drops open. She moves to her mother's side.
Oh, my God. I just said that. How do you know?
He told me. He told me when I went to his hotel room to be unfaithful to your father.
Cass rises, throwing her hands up.
This is just all so weird.
Yes, it is weird.
Facing away from her mother, Cass folds her arms.
Anyway, I ran out of there and I went home and I immediately told your father what I'd done. It seems that the thing that upset him most is that his wife almost cheated on him.
Poor Dad.
The raven-haired singer sits on the couch's armrest.
Poor Mom. And Eli, I mean...
Eli.
Think about it. 30 years is a long time to want to confess. I mean, you must have really thought that you weren't going to turn him in.
I haven't.
You haven't? Why not?
Because he'll deny it. He will. He'll deny it. And your dad thinks that he made up the whole story anyway just so he could get rid of me.
Dad said that.
Yeah.
Well, Dad's nuts, because that's exactly what you have to do, Mom. Because if you don't, then it sucks from every direction. I mean, Dad gets betrayed. You get humiliated, and Eli gets away with murder.
Oh, my God, it's such a small town. Everyone will know about
it. So you go to the cops in Cambridge. I mean, that's where it happened, right?
Yeah.
Well, then they'll listen. It's not like you're some weirdo. I mean, hell, you're the preacher's wife.
Cassie, shut up.
Yeah, in a minute.
Come on, we gotta rock.
And don't call me Cassie. Only my mother gets to call me Cassie.
Joanne looks over at her daughter.
Sorry.
Malky leaves, closing the door. Knitting her brow, Cass faces her mother.
And not often.
She smiles. Now a bridge stretches over a harbor. In a police station, Joanne walks with a curly-haired detective.
And Mr. Mayhew volunteered this information to you? Without any prompting?
Completely, and I never would have suspected him.
Well, what about at the time of the murder?
Well, not for a second. We were all great friends.
You never wondered ever? I mean, the crime being unsolved?
Well, I mean, I believe what the police believed, you know, that somebody had come in and off the street for drugs or something, and then they murdered her.
Mm-hmm. But now you're convinced it was Mr. Mayhew.
Well, I'm convinced because he confessed to me that he did it and he told me why he did it.
So you go by his hotel to schmooze about old times, and he just up and says, by the way, I killed Dana Jablonski.
Yes.
You have to wonder why he would say a thing like that. Did he think his secret was safe with you?
Well, I would have to assume that he did.
Did he say, what I'm going to tell you, you have to promise not to...
No, he didn't say anything like that. In fact, when he told me, I thought he was kidding, and I commented that that wasn't funny.
Sure. He didn't threaten you afterwards, or ask you not to say anything?
No.
So this visit to Mr. Mayhew's hotel room, it took place, what, 3-4 days ago?
Friday, 3 days ago.
Friday. Did your husband know you were going to see Mr. Mayhew at his hotel? I mean, before the fact. Before you actually went.
Of course he did.
The detective nods as she twiddles a silver pin.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
She smiles politely, then looks down at her desk. Joanne shifts her eyes uncertainly. Now in the Beckett sunroom, Daniel tinkers with a fishing reel. Joanne spots him, exits the house, and stands beside his chair. Daniel keeps his eyes on his work.
You been to see Cass?
How'd you know?
She called to see how you were. She told me she advised you to go to the police.
I took her advice.
Daniel turns his stern gaze on her.
You've been already?
As she nods, he pulls off his bifocals.
You don't think you should have talked to me first?
Why? Would you have advised against it?
No, but I would have liked to have known. And I certainly would have liked to have known you were going to talk to Cass before you went.
Why? Would you have advised against that, too?
I don't think she deserved to hear such a story from her mother. Frankly, I didn't think your relationship was up to those kinds of revelations.
Joanne smiles sarcastically, then paces across the porch.
Right. Unlike yours. Well, there you go. Just shows you how desperate I was. But you know what? It was the first time I felt as close to Cass as she's always been to you. Does that bother you, Daniel?
He packs up his tackle box.
Daniel, I have apologized. I know what I did was wrong, and it was hurtful, and it caused you pain.
Yes. Yes, it was, Joe. And why? That's what I can't answer. What was wrong between us that caused such betrayal?
You know what? Sometimes it isn't about us or we. Sometimes it's actually about me. Me. I'm a separate person. And that day in the rowboat when I had that premonition...
Oh, come on. You're just trying to justify that.
I am not trying to justify anything. If you could just... stop judging me just long enough so you can hear what I have to say before you make up your mind.
Daniel turns his shocked gaze away from Joanne as she catches her breath.
When I had that premonition or daydream or whatever you call it, it was real. It happened. The next day, Eli Mayhew walks into my office with his dog. And he loved that dog, and I do know about things like that. He loved that dog and he had to kill it, and that touched something in me. And along with all those good feelings that I had from the past, there was a connection to the rowboat. Can you not see there was a connection? You know what? You're always saying that God works in mysterious ways. Maybe this was God's way of bringing this murder to light.
You don't believe in God, Joe.
Well, maybe with a little luck, he'll believe in me. It's just...
Joanne storms tearfully out of the house. As she stands alone on the porch, Daniel takes a shallow sigh. Later, a black coupe pulls into the Beckett's driveway, Joanne watches from the porch steps, holding a throw rug. As she descends, Sylvia gets out of the coop and smiles at her.
Hi. Listen, I wanted to ask your advice about something.
Sure.
Eli's been really, I don't know, down. I mean, he has his moods, but... Well, this is more like depression. And I thought maybe he's brooding over Arthur.
Joanne releases her breath and shakes out the rug.
Arthur, yes.
Yeah, and I wondered about getting him a puppy, you know, Arthur the Second. And I wanted to ask you what you thought about that. I mean, do I get him a lookalike? What kind of dog was Arthur again?
A smooth fox terrier.
Oh, right. Yeah, I knew it was a dumb name. Or do I go the other way? Do I get a Rottweiler or maybe a Great Dane?
These things are pretty hard to know.
Yeah, but do you think it's a good idea? I mean, another dog.
Yeah. I think that is a good idea.
Joanne turns her back to Eli's wife.
Maybe it isn't Arthur, though, that he's worried about.
What else could it be? I mean, he's successful. He loves his job. He lives in a nice house in a beautiful town. He's married to me, and he has his help.
You're right. He has a lot going for him. You're right.
Maybe you should talk to him.
Me?
Yeah. He likes you. He told me he did. The night you came over for dinner with the Reverend, he said he was really glad he ran into you again.
Joanne avoids her gaze.
You know, if you were 10 years younger, I might be jealous.
There's no need to ever be jealous of me.
Well, I know. But I think maybe you should talk to him.
You know, I don't want to be rude, but could you excuse me because I need to get ready for work and I think I'm running late?
Sure. No problem. Listen. Thanks for the advice. Okay. Bye.
Sylvia takes a long look over her shoulder before getting into her car. Joanna watches thoughtfully from the steps. Now, Detective Geary arrives at the Beckett home. A paunchy older man stands with her. Daniel comes to the door.
Reverend Beckett?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Detective Geary. This is Sergeant Eberhard. We've come to talk to Mrs. Beckett.
Come in.
The officers move past him into the house. The Reverend leads them into the sunroom.
Can I get you anything? Coffee or soda?
We're fine, thank you.
The officers pace around the room. Joanne arrives.
I'll be in my den, if I can be of any help.
Sure.
As Daniel leaves, Joanne motions to a wicker chair.
Please, have a seat.
She sits across from Detective Geary. The officer smiles politely.
We've spoken to Mr. Mayhew about your allegation.
You mean about his confession?
Mr. Mayhew denies having made any such confession.
Well, then he's lying to you.
See, Mrs. Beckett, what you say Mr. Mayhew told you doesn't fill in any of the blanks. We knew he was doing a number with the victim. Seems like you all were. But his alibi was checked back then, and it held up. There was no murder weapon found, and the feeling was at the time that some drug addict came in off the street looking to steal something. Your friend surprised him and got killed. Now, nothing you've told us casts any particular doubt on that story.
But if he didn't admit it, why would I make that up?
You tell us.
Daniel listens at the doorway.
Do you think I'm the kind of person... who would make up something like that?
We don't know what kind of person you are, Mrs. Beckett.
She would never make up a story like that.
Entering, Daniel stands beside Joanne.
That's not my wife.
You sound pretty sure about that, Reverend.
I am.
It's all right, Daniel, if they don't believe me.
Mr. Mayhew says that your wife was pursuing him. He thinks she made all this up because it wouldn't play long.
Then he's a liar. As well as a murderer.
Is that because she wasn't chasing him? Or because he's denying what she said?
Both.
You'd be willing to make a statement to that effect?
Yes.
Stop it.
Joanne paces to the window and folds her arms. Geary leans in as Mrs. Beckett faces her, wringing her hands.
I was at Mr. Mayhew's hotel because I was attracted, interested, whatever the hell you want to call it, in him.
Eberhardt shoots Daniel a cold look.
He mistook that for something else. Sympathy, maybe, I don't know. He was not focused on me. He was intent on confessing something that had been on his conscience for all those years. My husband did not know I went to see him. He found out about that afterwards at home when I told him about it. And that's when he learned that I had intended to betray him. Us. I lied to you, Detective, when I said Daniel knew otherwise. But I am not lying to you now about what Eli Mayhew said to me in that hotel room.
Geary shifts her gaze to Daniel and stands beside her partner.
That how it was, Reverend Beckett?
Absolutely. That's how I know she's been telling the truth.
He takes his place beside his wife.
Because she's being more than honest about her reasons for going to that hotel.
Eberhardt trades glances with Geary, then takes a notepad from his inside jacket pocket.
All right, Mrs. Beckett. You're going to have to make a statement. We'll set it up at the prosecutor's office. It will be under oath, you understand?
I do.
As he flips the notepad closed, Geary steps toward the door. She turns back as Eberhardt walks over to stand beside Joanne. They stare out the window.
You don't remember me, do you? I was on that case, just a patrolman then. You folks were asking for trouble. Didn't even lock your door, as I recall.
Actually, I do remember you.
She faces the sergeant.
As I recall, you thought Dana had it coming to her.
I wouldn't go that far. But you all lived a very risky lifestyle back then. You remember?
I remember a girl who was full of life and had that brutally taken. That's what I remember.
He turns away.
We'll be in touch about the statement. Thank you.
Daniel hesitates before following Geary out. He holds the front door open for the detectives.
Thank you, Reverend.
Daniel nods as they exit. He watches the officers walk to the end of the porch, then turns and heads back inside. In the sunroom, Joanne stares sadly out the window. Daniel walks up behind her.
I am so very sorry.
Don't be sorry for telling the truth, Joe.
I had to tell you. I could not have told you.
Maybe he could not tell you.
He's gonna get away with it, isn't he?
You've done all you can do, Joe.
He places his hand gently on her shoulder.
Have I?
Now sunlight shines off the head of an African statue. Beyond the window it faces, Joanne exits her car in the Mayhew driveway, dressed all in black. She peers through the front door. Tribal masks rest on the wall beyond a frosted design on the glass. Eli slowly walks past the foyer staircase in a hooded sweatshirt and opens the door.
Alicia. You know, Sylvia and I were just about to go for a jog. You saved me. Come on in.
She glares, and his casual smile fades.
Please.
As Joanne steps inside, Eli looks toward the staircase, then leans close to her.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have involved you.
That is the least of it.
I know. I know what I did was a terrible, terrible thing, and it was a long time ago. And I've tried to live a life that counts.
Eli, you loved her.
Of course I did.
You love.
Of course I did.
And I loved her. You need to do this.
I can't undo the past.
But you can take responsibility for it now.
I do.
Calming, he glances upstairs again.
Look, I'm sorry if I had to tell them that you were mistaken.
Mistaken? No, they didn't think I was mistaken. They thought I was lying.
Alicia, I'm sorry.
My name is Joe. Joe is my name. And we are way past sorry.
All I can do is try and be better.
It's never going to be better. Don't you get that? You have this horrible secret, and you need to tell it. Do you want to spend the rest of your life in hell? Just tell them, Eli.
No, I won't. I won't do it. I don't deserve that.
You don't deserve it.
By the way, look around you. Hell's pretty well decorated, wouldn't you say?
Joanne's jaw hangs slack, and her stern gaze falters.
What is this?
Sylvia stands on the staircase holding a chocolate Labrador. She sets the puppy down.
Nothing, sweetheart.
Eli walks toward her.
I wouldn't say that. Not at all.
The old friends stare at each other.
What the hell is going on here?
Joanne heads out the door.
Eli, is there something going on between you two?
She turns back coldly.
There was.
As Joanne pulls the door shut behind her, Sylvia turns to her husband.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Outside, Joanne crosses the driveway in slow motion.
What is it? Tell them!
I don't know.
Now in church.
Amy Halloran was a wonderful mother, wife, and friend who died too young. And we are left to ponder why. Why are the good among us taken before their time? Whatever the circumstance, we are left with an abiding sense of injustice, of anger. How can this have happened, this tragedy for so many? And God has no ready answer for us. But he does have a profound sense of compassion.
Outside, Eli drives past the church. Clothes hang in back, and the puppy sits beside him.
Grasp all that was good and noble about Amy, and we hold on to that.
With Daniel.
And open our hearts to God's love. It is there. A peace that will conquer rage. Hope that will eclipse the emptiness.
Daniel's gaze falls on Joanne in the front pew.
And most of all, to wash our wounded soul, the tender mercy of forgiveness.
Joanne smiles faintly as she watches her husband with an intent gaze. Her chin trembles. In the back of the church, Sylvia sighs deeply. Outside, Eli's packed car drives off down the road. Now, our view hovers above muddy water. Daniel rows his boat beneath us with Joanne seated in the stern. As she looks back at him, he grins happily. She smiles. They look skyward, and afternoon sunlight shines on their faces. The boat glides across the center of the winding river, and puffy clouds fill the sky above the water's wooded banks. A credit appears. Executive producers Frank von Zernick, Robert M. Sertner.